Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I'm the biggest hypocrite in 2015. Once I finish this, witnesses will convey just what I mean. Been feeling this way since I was 16. Came to my senses. You never liked this anyway. Your friendship, I meant it. I'm African American. I'm African. I'm black as the moon. Heritage of a small village. Part of my residence. Came from the bottom.
Kendrick Lamar's big Grammy performance on Monday night was strikingly political. Race politics. A black protest song on center stage at the most watched musical event of the year. And right behind Beyoncé's powerful black anthem at the Super Bowl. The impulse in Black Lives Matter is flowing into American popular music now. This hour, On Point, Kendrick Lamar, Beyoncé, and the new center stage moment in black protest music. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What is breaking through here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today in the studio is Renee Graham, music and pop culture critic, contributor to the Boston Globe. Renee Graham, welcome back to On Point. Always great to have you right here.
Good to see you, Tom.
And with us from New York is Jamila King, senior staff writer at Mike. Her essay this week is headlined with two performances, Beyoncé and Kendrick Lamar Changed Black Storytelling Forever. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jamila King in New York, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So here we are. Jamila, you write in a terrific essay this week, Beyoncé and Kendrick Lamar have changed what's possible for mainstream black artists. What do you mean, Jamila?
I mean that, you know, it's been decades since we've seen artists of this stature take on political messaging in this way. And I think that to do it, to have two of the best-selling, the most popular black artists take these sorts of stands on America's biggest stages really, really means something. I mean, it's arguably never actually been seen on this level before. So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing the political evolution of an artist played out in public. And, you know, I think that's incredibly powerful. I think that's definitely, you know, speaking to a lot of the political protests that have been going on and sort of move these artists. It's also sort of saying that, you know, you don't have to check your politics at the door when you become a successful black artist.
A breakthrough right there, and we'll look at that. Renee Graham, it's not as if black protest music was born yesterday or this week. It's been around in many ways for many, many years, in many genres. But there is the sense in this last week of, with these very big names on the biggest stages we have in this country, that, oh, wow, these sentiments, these feelings, these ideas, these named elements of black life are now even here, total center stage.
It's spilling over. I mean, that's the thing. The issues that have been going on the last almost 2 years now, they're simply too big for artists to ignore. And to be contemporary, to be important, to be relevant, you need to be talking about these things. I think people expect that from Kendrick Lamar. They absolutely did not expect that from Beyoncé. And, you know, I hate the expression that this broke the internet, but it kind of stopped time a little bit when that video came out, and then the next day Beyoncé had that incredible performance on the Super Bowl.
She released Formation, the video that came along with that, and then at halftime, Super Bowl, there she was. It was so supposed to be a Coldplay halftime we had heard days earlier, but come on, it was all about Beyoncé when she came out with that crew, bandoliers across her chest, them in black berets a la Black Panther, and in the middle of it, Beyoncé.
My daddy, Alabama, mama, Louisiana, you mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag, swag. I see it.
Beyoncé and the song that was right there at halftime with the whole dance and performance that went with it. Renee Graham, not as baldly, bluntly political as Kendrick Lamar, and yet in another way, visually, when you put it all together, it was. I mean, she's saying things we haven't heard from her. Negro, Bama.
Well, just think of that line. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. This is Beyonce saying
yes,
this.
Yes.
You know, I got hot sauce in my bag swag. A lot of people had no clue what that meant. But if you understood, you were kind of taken aback because Beyonce has never been a political person. She's, you know, look, Beyonce's always celebrated her blackness, but there's always been a sense of her not being too black.
Well,
you know,
she was in a way visually a kind of a somewhere in the middle person, the universal artist.
But I think that's
way.
Also what happens to certain mm-hmm. black celebrities. Mm-hmm. I think they get deracinated by society. Mm-hmm. Beyonce didn't do that. That's the way society looked at mm-hmm. her. So
yes.
I think when she's up there saying, not just that I'm black and I'm proud, but I'm a Negro and look at my nostrils and I got, you know, Bama blood and all of that, you know, it was political in that it was the pride in her blackness, the pride in her negritude, if you will.
Yes. And did it take your breath away, Jamila, or were you ready for it? You'd probably seen the video. I hadn't yet. For me, this was the first I knew of Formation, and this was not Beyonce singing at the at President Obama's inauguration. This was something different.
Absolutely. I mean, when I saw the video, time definitely stopped. And, you know, I'm supportive of Beyonce, but I've never been taken by anything like I was by this video. You know, I think it's also important, like, this was her sort of talking back and responding to a lot of the criticisms that had been whispered, especially in the black community for years, right? And so before she
criticisms
had her daughter.
Like?
So before she had her daughter, Blue Ivy, there was a lot of sort of joking on the internet about whether the baby was going to look like Beyonce and be pretty and have sort of lighter features and a thinner nose, or if it was going to look like Jay-Z with more yep. traditionally African features. You know, there was a lot of controversy over, you know, what they did and didn't do with their daughter's hair and, you know, why they were choosing not to, you know, press it or perm it. And so this was just her sort of saying, you know, I don't care what you say about me. This is who I am. And it was surprising, right? We do expect this from Kendrick Lamar because he's an hip hop artist. We don't expect this from Beyonce, who's been in the limelight for the better part of her life.
Take a little bit of it apart for us, Renee. When she talks about Bama, I'm not even sure everybody even knows what that is, but this is a well-known reference, kind of a hick, but she's embracing it, celebrating it.
You know, I'm from New York, so when we talked about Bamas, we were talking about usually our country cousins, and it wasn't necessarily a compliment.
Yeah.
You know, it meant you were kind of country a little backwards. She's flipping the term and embracing it and say, yeah, I'm a Bama. You know, this is where my father's from. This is where my mother is from. And this is who I am. So she took a term that's often been a pejorative, even within the black community, and kind of flipped it into a term of endearment.
And the video, when you saw it, it was political. It was Katrina, her on top of a police car in the flood. I mean, you interpret the message for us, but it just felt potent.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you can listen to the song, but once you see the images from the Formation video, there's something else entirely going on. It's glossy, but not in a Beyonce kind of glossy. There's a kind of grit to it and a real sort of beauty in the images that she's evoking of Louisiana, of Katrina. You know, Katrina happened almost 11 years ago now, but it is an idea that it's still very present in the way she's presenting it, but also in the larger idea of what happened to these black people in this place and how they were treated.
And then right behind Kendrick Lamar on Grammy night, just banging it home. Here he was.
Came from the bottom of mankind. My hair is nappy, my is big, my nose is round and wide. You hate me, don't you? You hate my people, your plan is to terminate my culture. You f***ing me for, I want you to recognize that I'm a proud monkey. You vandalize my perception, but can't take down from it. And this is more than confession. I mean, I might press the button just so you know my discretion. I'm guarding my feelings, I know that you feel it. You sabotage my community, making a killing. You made me a killer, emancipation of a real
film. Jamila, this is a huge audience. Many people, of course, have known To Pimp a Butterfly for a long time, and of course, Black of the Berry, this song. But to see it with him in chains and sort of the prison outfit, this is real raised fist, right in your face stuff from Kendrick Lamar.
Right. I mean, the imagery was really, really evocative and incredibly powerful. You know, I think it also speaks to Kendrick's evolution as an artist. You know, he's had sort of a contentious relationship, I think, with activists over the past couple of years, black activists specifically. You know, if you listen to Pimp a Butterfly, a lot of this sort of internal grappling that he deals with is around, you know, killing black people, killing black people. And that's sort of a trope that a lot of black activists weren't quite comfortable with. And so, you know, but he's to see him, you know, embrace all of it, right? To see him be incredibly political. This isn't the first time that he's had a performance that's this charged, right? He was at the BET Awards last year where he rapped on top of a battered police car with a torn American flag to his side. So he's really, I think, more than anyone, become sort of a symbol of black protest music in this era.
So part of it is what's going on, the music itself, and part of it, Renee, is the venue, the Super Bowl halftime. This is the Grammys. BET Awards, big enough already, but the Grammys, that's everybody in the tent.
Well, that's what makes it even better. You're doing these things in front of the largest imaginable audience. Think of the audience you get for the Super Bowl. You get people who aren't even football fans and people who just want to see the halftime show. And here comes Beyonce, who's done the Super Bowl before, but she comes out in, you know, evoking the Black Panthers, you know, which still stirs a lot of emotions in this country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so many years after their heyday. And so I think to use that venue, and the same thing with Kendrick Lamar, he didn't water down his performance.
Mm-hmm.
He tweaked it up even more. You know, instead of sort of saying, okay, let me give you something that's palatable, he pushed it. When you have that opening image of him and all these other young black men in chains, evoking the ideas and the fact of mass incarceration of young black men in this country, incredibly bold, remarkable. It was a show-stopping moment. And it was the kind of performance that, if he wasn't already known, that makes a career, but also puts him on a very different plane as a performer and an activist.
We've got so many questions about this, about the heritage that lives behind all this, the moment we're at right now. What's opened the doors to this kind of expression in the biggest arenas of American public life and the message that's being delivered there? Renee Graham, please stand by with me here in the studio. Jamila King with Mike joining us today from New York. Listeners, you can join us. Are you taking on board what we are seeing, what we are hearing here? Kendrick Lamar singing in chains at the Grammys, Beyonce's crew in Black Panther berets at the Super Bowl. Are you taking on board Kendrick singing about whips and chains and You Hate Me, Don't You? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What are you hearing? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
When you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Kendrick Lamar at the Grammys, Beyonce at the Super Bowl, and more. J. Cole behind us right here with Be Free, looking at the striking new moment for black protest music. Jamila King is with us from New York, senior staff writer at Mike. She's been writing wonderfully about this. You can link to her latest essay at our website. Renee Graham writing wonderfully about this as well with me in the studio, music and pop culture critic. I want to hear from you what you are seeing in these performances, what you are hearing in these lyrics. Beyonce singing Negro Nose and Afros and being the black Bill Gates. What comes first here, Black Lives Matter or this music? Or are they spiraling up together? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. J. Cole was in Ferguson the week after Michael Brown's death, marched in protest following the grand jury decision in the great case of Eric Garner. Be Free behind us, released in 2014. And there is a whole lot more just booming up here right now as well in the biggest public arenas for performance in this country. Renee, Jamila, lots of callers for us. Madison, Alabama, Will is calling. Will, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Will. What do you think? Hello, Will.
Oh. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very clearly, Will. You are on the air.
Okay, here's the situation. You got to remember, there are those who are fearful and power over others make them feel less afraid. Because what it is that they only see, that when they see someone who's different from them, they always go try to instill the fear of them being criminals, black people or whoever, of being criminals, rapists or whatever. But you also have to remember, ever since segregation in this country was established in this country, they don't want to see anyone who wants to progress or get ahead of any of them, of anyone else. And they look at us as black people putting us in jail and everything like this because they feel, oh, they're going to rob us, or they're going to kill us or anything like this. Listen, I'm a military veteran, and I served in the military. Yeah, I had countless a little bit of racism here and there and everything. But the thing about it is like this. As a black man in this country, and when I served in this military, I put my life on the line in this country, for even for those who don't like us.
Will, let me ask you. We hear that. We hear it, Will. What about this music? When Kendrick is up there at Lamar at the Grammys with that performance, when Beyonce is there at Super Bowl halftime, what does it say to you?
It's sending a message. It's like this. Look, we're tired of you seeing us like thugs, criminals, or whatever. We're tired of you putting us in jail because you took away our economic opportunity to be successful in this country. If this is supposed to be the land of opportunity, why try to throw us in jail? Why shoot us? We're not the ones who's carrying the guns on us. And I'm to that point now where my son is about to go in the military. I have to make sure he's protected. I have to make sure that he's well taken care of. Now, my wife, she's a military vet as well. But the thing about, you also have to look at, we put our lives on the line even when we walk out the door just to go pick up groceries or whatever.
Well, we've got it. See Me in Full is how I hear your request out of that. And maybe this music, Jamila, maybe the what's being expressed here, being a way of putting that right up front. It's things being said that have not been said quite so publicly before.
Right. I mean, this is black artists speaking to their humanity. And that's frightening for a lot of people. I think you see that especially in the backlash that, in particular, Beyonce has faced since her Super Bowl performance. You know, people want to see a pop artist. People want to see someone who is apolitical, who they can just sort of look at and not have any strong feelings toward. And Beyonce isn't giving them that option anymore. And that's incredibly frightening. It's also incredibly powerful for her as an artist, especially given the really powerful history of black political music in America.
You follow this more closely than me. Give us a sense of the backlash here. I've heard a lot of people talking about, wow, that was incredible. Where's the backlash?
Sure. I mean, so just this morning, the Miami Police Union announced that they wanted folks to boycott Beyonce's Formation Tour, which, you know, is pretty much sold out. They want people to boycott it because they think that the video is very anti-police. You had some murmurs of an anti-Beyonce protest that was going to supposedly take place outside of NFL headquarters in New York City. Only a few people showed up to that. But, you know, people are not necessarily, you know, if you are someone who is already disturbed by the climate of political protests in this country, what Beyonce is doing is not going to sit well with you. And I think that's the point, right? She's agitating you. She's agitating from one of the highest perches you can agitate from. And that makes her incredibly powerful.
Big as it gets, here's a little more from Formation, her new single. Renee Graham kind of pride, I don't know, Beyonce pride, black pride, just, you know, I go hard, I take what's mine, I slay, like, as in killing it. And she is, who can deny, she's the biggest.
It's uplifting, it's affirming, but it's also unapologetically black. And that's the thing. I think a lot of people looked at Beyonce as being kind of black, but lowercase black.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly she comes out with this video and she is uppercase, bold type black. And it slapped at these sort of weird conventions and ideas that people had about who Beyoncé was. But I think the fact that they held those ideas said more about them than it said about Beyoncé. So yeah, it is a huge turning point for Beyoncé. She doesn't just go back to being a pop star. And maybe you just don't look at her now as, you know, the hair and the outfits and the teeth and the choreography. There's more to Beyoncé than that. So I think it's an important step for her. But I think the backlash has said a lot about that, too, and that people feel almost betrayed that Beyoncé is embracing these things.
But is it, Jamila, maybe an important step for the country as well? Because her saying, I am black within this role of superstar, maybe that's not an insurmountable fact for the country anymore. She's saying it, and she's still the superstar.
You know, we'll see. I think that it's really powerful for someone in her position to be taking this type of stand. And, you know, it's not to say that artists haven't been doing this on a smaller scale, right? Like, Talib Kweli has made a career out of 20 years about talking about his blackness. But it matters when someone of Beyoncé's stature, when Kendrick is out there talking about how proud they are to be black, right? Like, in the history of this sort of political music, we're going to remember James Brown saying, I'm black and I'm proud. We're not going to remember the black parties, that the Black Panther Party had a funk band called the Lumpin, after the Lumpin Proletariat. We're going to remember these bigger symbolic gestures. And I think that's really going to be important to this narrative of black political struggle in this country.
Everybody sees it right now. Dominique in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha. Dominique, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have the subject as far as Beyoncé doing what she had done. The jacket was, she'd even said it was a lot of homage to Michael Jackson's almost exact jacket that he had worn at his Super Bowl performance. But outside of that, Black Panthers were created to protect black people from the KKK and from violence in their communities. They were never formed as a terrorist organization, yet they were taken out of, you know, commission by our government, and yet the KKK still exists. So for all the comparisons you see on social media, and you hear it, you know, on the news, you know, the different shows bring up that you can compare the two, and that's absolutely not the case. They actually created programs that fed, you know, single mothers. They created the program WIC, which we all know millions of Americans of all shades use, you know, and then also if they're mad at the images that are in her video, I'm wondering where the disgust and anger was when these actual events took place.
Yeah,
How dare you be mad at the image, but when it was happening to us, you guys told us to be quiet. And you're mad that the little boy that was dancing in front of the police, yeah, he was maybe a couple years younger than Tamir Rice, but where was the anger when his murderer walked free and he basically did a drive-by on a 12-year-old kid and it's on video?
Dominique, we've got it. I mean, Renee, what strikes me, I don't doubt that there is some of that backlash out there, but strikes me that almost more amazing that it seems like a general acceptance. People didn't run screaming out of the Grammys. They stayed around for the second half of the Super Bowl. TVs all over America were not turned off and thrown out the window.
Well, I think it's that point again, and Jamila made it as well. You know, people expect this from hip-hop. There's a long tradition of hip-hop going back to Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five's The Message, or the Jungle Brothers, or KRS-One and Ice-T. There's a long, you know, NWA. There's a long history of this. But with Beyoncé, it's different. She's a pop artist. People don't expect this from pop artists. So, again, I think there was this sense of betrayal with Beyoncé. Like, how dare you, of all these people, we've accepted you, and how dare you come and throw this in our faces? But as I said, it's two things with Beyoncé. One is the imagery of the video and the Super Bowl appearance. But there's also the lyrics of Formation, where she's affirming all these things about her blackness. I think both
without
of those
apology,
things,
without trimming,
without apology,
just right out there.
Right. And I think that's a big thing, a problem for people. I think this idea that, you know, people are going to protest. Do I expect there to be protests outside some of her upcoming shows? Sure. But it's not going to matter. The shows are already sold out, and it's going to be huge. It's not going to really matter to people, you know, what these other people who are going to make all these noises are saying.
Made it even onto Saturday Night Live in a humorous way of people watching this, and suddenly, you know, they showed white people suddenly discovering, oh, Beyoncé's black. Here's a clip.
Beyoncé released a new music video that embraces her black heritage.
Beyoncé video is unapologetically black.
Tribute to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Case for a black message.
Claims her blackness
black.
Like never before.
Honey, get in
black
here.
Video, yes.
What is it? What's wrong?
Black.
Out of nowhere.
I think Beyoncé is black.
The day Beyoncé turned black.
Oh, that is just crazy. Just crazy. Lauren in Charleston, South Carolina. Lauren, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to say I'm white. I'm a white 30-year-old female, and I loved the video, the Beyonce video. But I can kind of speak to some of the backlash. Before I'd even seen the video, heard from people who I know who love Beyonce saying that it made them uncomfortable. They didn't like it. They thought it was kind of dark, you know. And the thing is, it actually, I think, aesthetically was really beautifully done.
Yes.
But it was kind of dark, and I think that it should have been in a way, because it was being honest. And I think I appreciate so much the license that she has given. I mean, in this situation, you know, I think that it is totally about Black pride and letting people be proud of who they are. That's something that we can all benefit from. And it just really bothers me that I feel like particularly white Americans are so, for some reason, intimidated by this. It's just sad, and I think the imagery spoke to that tremendously. When she starts off on the cop car, she's really taking on one persona, and she's, you know, more country and sort of maybe like to how she started out, and then as the video progresses, she's glamorous and hanging out of the car, and her, you know, she's in a fur, and she just looks like so powerful, but yet she's really the same person, and I think it speaks to the potential of, you know, we have Black girls who have so much potential, but yet, you know, as Beyonce at the end goes down, drowning on the top of this cop car, it's like sort of a symbol of how I feel like the system is just kind of failing them. And so while they have this potential to be amazing, it just kind of, you know, it's just the reality. And I give her a lot of props for having the courage in her situation to really kind of make something that
put it
that
right out there.
This.
Lauren, we've got it. And of course, it's not just Kendrick Lamar. It's not just Beyonce. I mean, you look back at D'Angelo on the Black Messiah came out after Ferguson back in 2014, you know, with the charade. We heard a little bit at the top of the hour. Here's more. D'Angelo, all we wanted was a chance to talk. Instead, we got outlined in chalk. I mean, Jamila, you write that this is about allowing artists of color the range of complex human emotion and experience afforded to their white counterparts. Okay, they're grabbing it. They're taking hold and exercising that. What are you hearing that we may not have heard in earlier generations of Black protest music here, Jamila?
I think what we're hearing, and this is to Lisa's point, is you're hearing these artists also have a little bit of fun, right? And so, you know, even though Beyonce's video for Formation is really dark and deep, and even if it's beautiful, it's also kind of hilarious, right? She's singing about hot sauce and Red Lobster and going to the mall and buying Jordans, right? That's in and of itself. It's a really complex, like, portrait of Blackness, right? You can be concerned about police brutality, you can be concerned about the plight of Black folks in America, and you can also go to Red Lobster and eat cheddar biscuits. Like, it's, you know, like, you can actually, you can, there are a lot of sort of complex narratives, I think, that are going on in that song, and I think it's beautiful, right? I think you can, it's the same sort of freedom that white artists have traditionally been afforded in their music.
So is it more or less potent for that nuance, for that range of emotion, anger to almost frivolity within the same song, Renee?
I think it's fine. You know, I think it reminds me of a song by Gil Scott-Heron, who was as political an artist as there's ever been. He had a song called Whitey on the Moon. Mm-hmm. And it was about how all these terrible things were happening in his neighborhood. But you know what? Whitey's on the moon. That was a really humorous song, but very pointed political nature. And I think that, you know, you're getting that same sort of duality in the music now, where there can be a sense of humor, but it doesn't overshadow the political ideas that are there.
We are looking at a, what, new generation of black protest music. It is very prominent. It is right out there, halftime at the Super Bowl, the biggest performance at the Grammys, the biggest names, and with some really interesting messages right now. Renee Graham, it's so great to have you right here. Jamila King in New York at Mike. Listeners, you can join us. What's the message you're hearing in these big artists' new lyrics and how they're putting them front and center? Is there a breakthrough here? What is it? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. You should. Squarespace.
Anybody hear us pray for Michael Brown or Freddie Gray? Peace is more than the absence of war.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a striking moment in black protest music. Kendrick Lamar at the Grammys, Beyonce at Super Bowl halftime. Behind us right here, Prince, not an artist known for highly, overtly political music, but after Freddie Gray's death in Baltimore, he came out with this song, Baltimore, as a tribute to the people of Baltimore, and more, you can hear it right there, Michael Brown or Ferguson, called out in the Prince song. Jamila King is with us, senior staff writer at Mike. Renee Graham is with us, music pop culture critic with me in the studio. Great to have her here. You can join us as well. What is the message you're hearing in these big artists' new lyrics and how they're putting them front and center? Is there a breakthrough here? What is it? Is this black artist just being honest about race and their feelings? Is that a big deal? Is it something more than that? Is it? Is that a political push? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Renee, I put it to Jamila, but the same to you. If there's a new push here, what's the texture, the tenor of it? Message or consequence of it? How's it different from what came before?
I mean, in some ways it is, and in some ways it isn't. I think of it as a continuation. You can go back to the music of Nina Simone and Abby Lincoln, you know, of Max Roach. There's always been a political element in a lot of black music.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in Calypso, you had Mighty Sparrow. In reggae, obviously, you had Bob Marley and Peter Tosh. You know, what's happening in the communities, what's affecting the people is always a part of black music. Now, that's not to say that every black artist is political, but it's always been a venue to express that and to get that across. I think that we've moved into a moment, especially in these last 2 years, where there's so much happening in communities, there's so much turmoil that the artists are compelled. They have to talk about these things. It would be absurd for them to ignore these issues.
Mm-hmm.
They know who their audience is, but beyond that, they're doing it for themselves as well. What I really always like about Kendrick Lamar is you hear him as a young black man in America working it out. You know, he's talking about these sort of different issues. He's talking about how he feels about black-on-black violence. He's talking about how he feels about police brutality and mass incarceration. You know, we're watching this young man become full. It's like he's growing up before our eyes. And with Beyonce, it's a bit different because Beyonce's, it feels like she's been around as long as we can possibly remember. Yeah. But it also hits a moment where she decides at the height of her fame that these are issues that not only that she can talk about, but that she needs to talk about.
Mm. Nina Simone, of course, she was right out there and just laid it out as plain as could be. Let's listen back for just a second, all the way back to 1964. Mississippi, goddamn.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn, can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer.
She's got that sprightly show tune sound and tempo, but this was after bombing and killing of epic history. I mean, Jamila, when you look at what we've got now, think about the long history of the protest thread in black music and the anger right there, Nina Simone, just right there under that tempo. What's the evolution now that you hear, that you see in today, Jamila?
Well, so I think when we listen to Nina Simone, it's also important to remember the really, really high political cost that she paid for her music.
Yeah.
You know, she writes about this in her memoir that, you know, as the sort of civil rights movement began to fade a little bit toward the end of the 60s and well into the 70s, she had a hard time booking gigs because people associated her with protest music. And, you know, they didn't want her to get on stage and start singing about black people.
Mm-hmm.
And so she actually paid a huge price for that. I think it's different now. I mean, we'll see how this will play out with Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar. You know, I think it's not irrelevant that Beyonce's husband is a very wealthy man in the music industry, mm-hmm. and that Jay-Z. He recently made a donation of $1.5 million to black organizers. But, you know, I think it really speaks to – there could be an evolution in terms of the prices that black artists no longer have to pay for their politics. Time will tell. Mm-hmm. But so far, you know, they're not paying the same price that Nina Simone had.
Does that suggest to you, Renee, that is a kind of evolution, that white Americans are – there may be some backlash to Beyonce's performance, but at the same time, people are beginning to integrate more fully the realities of fellow Americans, in this case, black Americans. They're not like screaming from the theater when these messages hit them.
You know, I can't fathom that Beyonce, one of the biggest artists in mm-hmm. the world, is going to suffer any real backlash that can harm her career. She's not going to have trouble, you know, booking clubs, let alone, right. you know, she's selling out stadiums.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think she's going to be just fine.
But, Nina Simone was almost exiled, self-exiled.
Exactly. But, you know, but there was also, there was no filtering with Nina Simone as well, you know,
yeah.
and it was very, very threatening. It was a different
time. That's true.
I think that the people are reacting in a certain way that Beyonce, but Beyonce didn't get up there on stage and sing Mississippi Goddamn. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think there'd be a completely different reaction to it if
mm-hmm.
there had been.
Mm-hmm.
I think Beyonce is going to be fine. And I also think Kendrick Lamar is going to be fine. I think the artistry that he displays and the intelligence in the work that he does is going to carry him through. I don't see them suffering in the ways that Nina Simone and some of the artists had to.
Keith in Buffalo, New York. Keith, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I think the lady that's speaking right now, the things that she said, I totally agree with the things that she's saying. Another thing that I want to just add is that, of course, there's been a lot of artists like Billie Holiday, Nina Simone, that have made, you know, very controversial songs and music over the years. But just like she said, I want to just reiterate that with all the things that have been going on in the community here lately over the past few years, and then all the backlash and the criticism that President Obama takes from, you know, people, it's really showing that racism and prejudice towards African Americans in this country is still alive and well. And it's, you know, of course, you know, I always have a problem because European history is mandatory in school, but African American history or African history is not. And that's a crime to me because, you know, if we knew our history more from the time we was in elementary, some of these issues that we have, I don't think that we would have them.
Keith,
you know,
does this music, do these songs and these performers help push this forward? Are they important to you? Are they sidebars to you?
I think it is important because, you know, wealthy and famous people that are black, most of the time they always try to separate them from the community, you know, whether it's the lifestyle they live or the area, et cetera, et cetera. And as soon as someone is famous that has a voice, speaks out, they just get bombarded with just criticism. Because, it's, again, that is just trying to, why would you try to pull someone away from their own race of people and not let them speak up for injustices that their race is experiencing?
Keith,
a crime. That's insidious.
Yeah, Keith, we've got it. I don't know if they're bombarded with criticism. I mean, she's still at halftime at Super Bowl. That's not exactly driven out of the city. She's not alone. Lauryn Hill, 2014, Black Rage, she sang. And again, that kind of a up-tempo, my favorite things, tune floating through here, but Black Rage is the title. Let's listen.
Black Rage is founded on two-thirds a person, rapings and beatings and suffering that worsens, black human packages tied up in strings. Black Rage can come from all these kinds of things. Black Rage is founded on blatant denial, squeeze economics, subsistence survival, deafening silence and social control. Black Rage is founded on wounds in the soul.
There's a Mississippi goddamn kind of sound right there working in Lauryn Hill in 2014. Jamila King, do you see these big artists at this point leading, following, echoing? What's the dialectic between Black Lives Matter and what we've seen in the streets and in protest and what you see and hear from the stage?
I mean, I think they're working sort of in concert. I think that both sides are giving energy to the other. I think the great thing about Beyoncé, right, is that Beyoncé and Kendrick are sort of offering history lessons, right? And so if you're a teenager and you're watching the Super Bowl and you're like, who are the Black Panthers? You're going to go Google it and, you know, find out. And so I think that's a really, really powerful thing. You know, I think it's also important to note that, you know, there have been rumors about Beyoncé and Jay-Z giving money and bailing out Black activists for a couple years, right? And so this is, it's not, it's new for them, right? It's very, very new, especially for Beyoncé to do so publicly. You know, but I think that there's been some stuff going on behind the scenes that is finally sort of coming to the forefront, and that's really, really powerful.
Announcing last week that Tidal, the distribution music distribution company donating, Jay-Z is donating $1.5 million to Black Roots organizing, Jay-Z's and Beyoncé's, I guess. Sean in Suffolk, Virginia. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is that I think that if you are a protest artist, that you come out of the gate, come out, start your career as a protest artist. There are many who have done it, going back to, I mean, I guess ever since the art was formed. And I'll take you an example. And it's not a color issue. I loved Bruce Springsteen growing up. And then Bruce Springsteen got very political, and he lost me. His music just, to me, was not as good. But you go back and you have groups like NWA and Grandmaster Flash, and they had a message and they had the good sound at it. This is who they were. This is who we are.
Are you saying Beyoncé doesn't have the right to become more political at this point in her career? Is that where you're going?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay.
I just think that, you know, and that's fine. It's, in my opinion, you should, you know, if you are so strong about the way you feel and you are, and this is, you know, no matter, and it's a music thing, it's not a color thing, then as an artist, why didn't you come out saying this? And
Sean, we got our time is short, but I don't know, maybe Sean's right, but it's a lot to ask as well. I mean, Beyoncé was a kid when she began performing. I guess we come to political awareness, but some may look at her wealth and fame and say, oh, yeah, it's easy when you're, you know, living on the mountaintop.
Well, but who's to say she doesn't have the right?
Yeah, yes,
you know,
yeah.
Beyoncé is really rich and really famous, but Beyoncé is still a young Black woman in America. And maybe she's not going to be confronted with some of the issues that others might be, but it doesn't mean she's not concerned about them and doesn't have a right to talk about them. Using the point he made about Bruce Springsteen, you know, Bruce Springsteen made a song about, I believe it was Amadou Diallo, who was the West African immigrant who was shot, you know, at 41 times in the vestibule of his Bronx apartment. Mm-hmm. Bruce Springsteen did that. And he got a lot of backlash as well. You know, the cops were upset and they didn't want to, you know, work at his shows. But, you know, artists have to express themselves and they have to talk about what is going on. It's a matter of not just talking about what happened before, but it's also about dealing with current events. And I have to respect an artist who decides that it doesn't really matter if this sells or not. I need to get this out there. I need to express myself.
Yeah, Kendrick Lamar had two songs off To Pimp a Butterfly at the Grammys Monday night, also performed an unnamed song, which talks about the death of Trayvon Martin.
It's been a week already, feeling weak already. Got me a peak, possibility of what could be. Situation is heavy, I got to prove. On February 26, I lost my life too. It's like I'm here in a dark dream. Nightmare hearing screams recorded. Say that it sounds distorted, but I know who it was. That was me yelling for help when he drowned in his blood. Why did he defend himself? Why couldn't he throw a punch? And if a community, do you know what this does? Add to a trail of hatred. 2012 was taken for the world to see. Set us back another 400 years. This is modern day slavery. The reason why I'm by your house.
Just very explicit right there. Robert in Buffalo, New York. You're on the air, Robert.
Hi. Ultimately, what we see happening is these artists are putting forth truth that's always been there. I don't think it's wrong to have a negative feeling about it. A lot of people who aren't black are going to watch it and say, have these negative feelings. And that's not bad. That's good. But if you don't like that feeling, change it. If you don't like mass incarceration, if seeing it put in your face makes you feel a sizzle in your chest, then you need to do something about it. And that's basically what these artists are doing, and I applaud them for it.
If you don't like the reality that you hear them portraying, change the reality. I guess that's the whole, if it's really protest music, that is the whole point, ultimately. Jamila, are we in a new river here? We're going to see more and more of this, or do you think this is a moment?
You know, I think we're going to see more of it. You know, truly transcendent artists make music that captures a moment. And I think that we're seeing exactly that, right? Not all of it's going to be as good as what we're seeing from Kendrick and Beyonce, but, you know, we're seeing so much of it. And I think that we're all better for it, right? I think that music is better for it. I think that our political system is better for it. I think that creativity is better for it.
And I can't speak to this, Renee, but for African-Americans, black Americans, it must feel good to hear truth just said, to just have it out there.
It is. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you listen to this music and there's a sense of feeling kind of, it's like justified. Like, yes, that's what I know. This is my reality. And here it is at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
She's talking about hot sauce in her bag. That's on the Super Bowl. You know, now I'm not a woman who carries condiments, but there are a lot of people who are. And I think that was a really meaningful moment because it wasn't just about hot sauce in the bag. It was speaking about a culture and a thing that people do.
No shame. No.
Exactly.
Here we are. Here it is.
To see what you know reflected on a show that's being seen by a billion people. Phenomenal.
It is some kind of moment. And the whole country watching and listening, learning, feeling, as Renee Graham says, many justified by what's right up there. So grateful to the two of you for coming in and listening with us, thinking with us. Jamila King, senior staff writer at Mike. Your piece is terrific. There's a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jamila, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Renee Graham, you are always terrific. You're always welcome right here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Tom.
The wonderful Renee Graham. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point. Yeah, what's mine? Hey, what's mine? I'm a star, I'm a star. Cause I slay, I slay.